Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending upon where you are in the world. This is Walter Davis with Progress in the World Radio Show, coming to you from beautiful Canyon Lake, California, where we have a partly cloudy day here. We're expecting temperatures by the end of the week up into the high 90s. So we're about to go into this late spring, summer weather, and this is a perfect time to bring one of my best friends and a person that I admire a great deal, Dr. Carol, on to our show. And Dr. Carol is the author of the upcoming book, Heal Your Life. She is a board-certified OBGYN and primary care specialist and an intuitive and spiritual healer who's helped thousands of men and women for the past four decades. Her life purpose is to educate as many people through telephone consultations, her writing, speaking engagements, podcasts, radio shows, etc. Today we're going to talk about part four of her upcoming book, Heal Your Life. Find your reason to live. Dr. Carol, you've written many award-winning books, and there are more to come, obviously. Please tell our listeners the reasons why you wrote this book and why it is this step and why this step is so important. I'm sorry.
Yes. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. It's so good to be on the show, and thank you, Walter, for having me. I want you to know that I truly appreciate you to give me the opportunity to share my knowledge to your listeners. And I wrote this book because I have so many people that I continue to see in person or via telephone who the reason they're going through emotional or physical problems in their lives and feeling stuck is because the lack of faith, the lack of being connected to a higher power, the lack of using many tools that I sat down and wrote in this book, and we've discussed many before, and then there are more we'll be discussing every Wednesday. And then this particular one, finding your reason to live, it is very important to you, because if you don't have a reason to live, last week we discussed having a life purpose, but having a reason to live, it is what has helped so many of my patients, whether they are going through a chronic illness or they just discovered they have cancer or they want to quit smoking. What is it? What is it that when things are rough, when you're going to chemotherapy, when you're taking medications or you have problem in a relationship, what is it is going to keep you focused? You have to continue. Because if you don't have that, you would more likely to be depressed, and then it's a vicious circle. When you're depressed, and you become sicker, and then things get worse. Whatever you're going through, you cannot heal. So that was one of the main reasons writing this book in general, but this particular chapter in particular.
So this is a very important thing for me to focus on, and one of the things I have been able to do was to turn around negative things that have occurred in my life growing up in tragedy, having my father murdered, having to fight the police in Birmingham, and having the Klan bomb my church and bomb our homes. So my reason to live is to stand for justice and for peace and for love. That's why I'm really focused on those things, and this is why it's such an honor to have you on my show. So that's part of my descriptor for my reason to live.
And if we have anybody who wants to ask any questions, we open, and we like people to ask us questions, because it's for you, it's to educate. So, and then I'll give you an example. whenever you're stressed, some people will use a kind of an addiction to help release the stress. It could be from alcoholism from A to Z. I can name a few, from alcoholism to exercising to drinking to use drugs to violence and sex and food and whatever that the people will use. So whenever we are stressed, we're going to go back to it. And then, but especially, for example, what I do with my patient who smoke, and then I never tell my patient, you need to quit smoking. You never tell somebody whatever they're doing is to release their stress, whether it's exercise, going to the gym, and then hurting their body. Let's take smoking, for example. I never tell my patients, you need to quit smoking. And I just make them see what is the consequences of smoking, especially if you have diabetes, if you have high blood pressure, if you already have a heart attack. What is it? The number one thing is, what is it that you would want to be alive 10 years from now? What is it when the stress is so strong that you have to do something, you have to have a release, and when you know it, you feel guilty. People around you are telling you, you can't do this, you can't do that, but it's even causing you more stress. What is it that is going to help you? Stop doing it, and many times we can't stop doing it because that's part of a protection. That's what that's what is giving us some solace in the middle of chaos. And you see some people, they know cigarette smoking is no good for me, but then when they are under stress, a whiff of the cigarette, they feel better. So how can you tell people you cannot do something that is so ingrained in you, so ingrained that it's going to make you feel better in the short term? And even though in the long term, you're going to have the consequences. So many of my patients who smoke, for example, I will ask them, how many cigarettes do you smoke? But before I do that, the goal is for them to smoke less, because you cannot ask somebody to quit. If you think somebody has an addiction to whatever it is, and you're going to say, you should, that means you don't know, you've never been through pain, you've never been through hurt, you've never been through situations that you need some solace, and you're going to choose whatever it is. And so I always ask them, what is it? What is the reason? For 10 years from now, that's nothing to do about you, because you don't, when you're under stress, you really don't care about yourself, because the only thing you need, you feel you have to, is to appease that pain that is right there. And then many will choose a granddaughter. I want to see my granddaughter graduating from college. I want to see my son getting married. I would love to, let's say if the person has diabetes, and it's very difficult to control their diabetes, and the cigarette, the smoke, even though they're smoking less. I understand that the harm, but when the urge comes to do whatever I've chosen from A to Z, I will have that picture. I will have that picture in my mind, that granddaughter graduating from college. And I call it a Kodak moment. You have to have it, because it's essentially ease it. When you replace, when the urge comes, see, the urge is something physiologic. It's a physiological thing that's happening, whatever you're doing, because you stress, and some people, they say, you stress, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to have a cigarette, or I'm going to have sex, or I'm going to eat. And many are you're going to, I know I cannot do this work, I know I cannot drink, but the stress, life is chaotic, I have to do something. And that's when that reason that I feel is important, that reason that particular thing that the person chooses to keep it in front of them. If it's something specific, it's specific. It's just like, I want to live, like, I want to do this. No, something specific that you replace it. It's just like, I will talk later in the later shows about affirmation, something you can say, utter. But it's a visual thing, something that is in your mind. I'll give you an example. When I was doing my residency training, I was in a hospital in the at Mount Sinai. I was a woman in the 70s. It was late 70s. I was a woman. I was black. I was a foreign medical graduate. I was the first black person in that whole hospital. And for one thing I knew, I was determined. I was determined that I was going to make it, regardless of the snow, regardless of the hours, the grueling hours, I was determined. So what I chose at that moment, over the years, it changed. It changes over the years. I have something else. And then at that time, I chose a picture of me holding a little girl. A little girl that I always knew I was going to deliver a baby girl in my private practice. I was going to deliver a baby girl in private practice. I was going to take pictures with the babies when they come for the 6-week checkup, and I was going to put them on my wall. I was going to have a wall. The more I delivered, the more I will put pictures. One night, I had gone to the hospital. I left my home at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got to the hospital at 6:30, and I have to make rounds for my patients. I was like a third-year resident. I went, and you have to see your patients, and then at 7 o'clock, all of us, all the residents, all the medical students, we convey in one room for the morning report. 7 o'clock. Then, after that, we're going to work the whole day, and then we stay all night and the next day, let's say it's Tuesday, so I will be going home at 5 o'clock. If I don't have patients coming for surgery the next morning, so I might go home the next day at 8 o'clock. So see how many hours I have to be in the hospital. So I had the flu, and you know when you have the flu, you might have to tell your body. And your body tells you, no way, I'm not going to do anything you tell me. I need rest, but you can't. So that day, it was 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. I'm supposed to start the clinic. I had been up all night. I was in surgery all morning. I was too tired to even have lunch. I just went and collapsed in the call room. And I'm supposed to see patient in the GYN clinic, a full schedule, and I just went and collapsed in the call room. It's a place, there is no window in the middle of the hospital, a hole, and my pager went off, and I look at the number, and it's the clinic, and I say, what am I going to do? I cannot get up, and I said, what am I going to do? I called the chief resident, Danny, when you're chief resident, you're just studying for your boards. You're there and you tell the other resident below you, do this, do that. So I said, maybe if I call Danny and ask Danny to do the clinic for me, I could be able to rest because my body, I cannot get up. And Danny said, I called Danny and I said, Danny, could you, I paid him, and he called me. I said, Danny, I am not feeling well. I need you to go to, can you do the clinic for me? And he said to me, what are you talking about? You're supposed to do the clinic. I'm studying for my boards. And I said, Danny, I can't do that. And he said, you knew when you choose to be a resident, you knew it was going to be hard. You knew that, you know you had to get up. You have to go into the clinic. And he hung up with me. And he just hung up on me. And I said, oh, my God. So I am there, and the clinic, of course, is paging me. The patients are waiting. We have been attending. The doctor was there. Where is the resident? And then So while I'm in bed and I am feeling so sorry for myself, I can't, you know, physically I can't. And that's the time I had that picture. That picture of that little girl, of that little girl that I'm holding dearly, because for me to be able to hold this little girl, I have to get up. I have to get up. I just say, oh, my God. So I just went there, and I just, my body said, no, you're not getting up. You're not getting up. And I said, yes, you have to. So I got up. I went to the girl's room, as I call it. And I just turn on the water and I wash my face and I'm crying and I scream and I scream. I say, God, give me strength. Body, you need to get up. You need to get up. You need to get up. And I wept and I cried and I wept. And the more I saw, and I saw that picture, you can't. I said to myself that day, maybe it's the day I'm going to quit. I can't do this anymore. I can't. Physically, as humanly, I've been up for, let's say now, 30 hours. I can't. But I found the strength. I found the strength. I prayed. I screamed. The picture is there. They say, you can't quit. You can't quit. You can't quit. And I found the strength, and I went and saw patient that afternoon. I think that was what was one of the worst time I've ever had in my life, where I had to go deep, deep, deep inside to find it. It would have been so easy for me to quit that day. At the time, when we are in a situation where it's so humanly possible, that's the time we become, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. So we're talking instant gratification. My body can't do it. I can't. But then there is a little sliver of hope, and that's finding that, what I chose, what the little girl, that picture keep on flashing in my mind, you cannot quit now. It's been so many years. We have one year and 2 months to go. You cannot quit right now. And it's just like you see the person running the Olympic or trying to do something, and the last miles are the toughest. That's why. And I use that. I have my patients find them, find that granddaughter that you want to make it. That's the reason I wrote this chapter.
And so I can definitely identify with that. You know, being in the U.S. Navy nearly 25 years, there were times when I had 30-hour work days, and there were times when I had to do spherical trigonometrical calculations for my ship as a navigator while people were shooting at me. And so I had to really just concentrate and focus and remember what I'm living for. I was living for my retirement. I was living for my family. So what I'm hearing you say is that some people need things like alcohol and cigarettes in their time of distress in order to assuage the emotional and physical pain they may be going through, and that basically you can't tell anyone just stop smoking or stop drinking. They have to come to that conclusion themselves, and they also have to have a sense of spirituality and a sense of future and grasp a hold of that one little piece of hope and hold on to that and focus on your reason to live, and that's how you get through things. Is that pretty much accurate, what you're saying now?
Definitely, definitely. My baby sister was diagnosed. Though I'll give you an example. My baby sister was diagnosed with cancer. Nobody has cancer in the family. She has cancer, and the first time she said, If I make it, I am going to go and play the saxophone. I said, why the saxophone? She said, she lived with my mother. I was raised by my grandmother. She was raised by my mother. She said, when she had a neighbor women who play the saxophone. Women don't play saxophone. In Haiti, you don't play the saxophone. So she said, I would watch her playing the saxophone. And I said to myself, I want to play the saxophone one day. So there she is. She's a nurse in Florida. And she told me she wants to play the saxophone. I said, I have to bid this. I have to bid this. And so that means in her mind is the saxophone. Saxophone. And then I said, okay. So she went through it. She went to, you know, all the things that you have to go through, surgery, mastectomy, reconstruction. Every time she said, that's it, my saxophone. And then guess what? One day, we have a family reunion, all of us. My mother, I'm the oldest. We have six children. I'm the oldest. And I'm the buffoon. I'm the comedian. So, and she said, okay, guys, I'm playing the saxophone. She will let us know. I'm playing the saxophone. And I said, and she said, I'm preparing a show for you, a little show for you. And I said, so here we are sitting right there, and my sister in the kitchen, she has an island. She pulled the box. I screamed, yeah! People said, what's the matter with you? They don't say that anymore. They know I'm crazy. And I just saw the saxophone, just the idea that she made it. And she has a box of a saxophone. She has a saxophone in the case on the kitchen island. She opened it. I screamed. Everybody's laughing. Everyone's laughing, you know. And then I am watching her. Taking the saxophone, they have something to put around her neck, and I scream, yes! And then she went, and she takes, there is something called a reefer or something, a reed. And she put it in, she has to put it in her lips, I scream. She put it in the saxophone, and she's ready, she put her fingers, and we're all waiting, and she just goes the first note, boom! And I, oh my God, and I start screaming and screaming, and I say, give us a break, let her play. But the idea of going through my sister's illness and her wanting to play a saxophone and watching her making it and playing the saxophone, it was one of the most beautiful days of my life. And, you know, when you're going through cancer, chemotherapy, and surgery, it's not easy. So...
Well, I know that well, having had a history of cancer in my family and cancer myself. So this is amazing. So you're saying that you can focus, that you can do what you want to do in many cases by just holding steadfast, by just continuing to focus on your life purpose. That'll get you through things.
Yes, your reason to live. I call it the reason to live. Because when we talk about the life purpose, let's talk about the life purpose. Like, your life purpose is, okay, I'm here on this earth, and there was something I want to do. I want to be a healer. I want to be whatever you choose to be doing. To me, it's a life purpose. When I started to write the book, I said to myself, aren't they the same thing, your life purpose or reason to live? And I realized, no, it's not. Your purpose is wanting to, there's something I am set to do for humanity, for my overall, whatever it is, who I am. This is who I am. I am a healer, and then my purpose is to, for example, educate, and for this reason, we're having a recurring show, and that I write books, and I speak, and I was speaking yesterday at a beautiful place, when I go and see my patients, when I'm with a patient, my purpose is to make sure, that's what I do. Whatever is wrong with him or her, we're going to find it out, and I'm going to give him or her the tools that she needs. And it's very easy for me, whether in person or over the phone, you're going to find whatever is ailing you, whatever tools you need, I'm going to see it, I'm going to give it to you. That's my purpose. That's my purpose. By the time I die, I would have made this world a better place. That's my purpose. But having a particular reason in your life that you hold dear, that you have to have. That's why I give you my reason to live. I'll give you four of them. My purpose is to be a healer for my patients, to be an educator, a writer. But my reason to live, my family. I am the matriarch of this family. My father, I am the oldest. I am the oldest in my mother's children. Whenever they're going through a rough time in their lives, they know they can call their big sister. They call Tika, Kamumush, Kawowo, Kawoli, Kawo, the diva, the crazy one, the comedian. They know whenever there is something rough going on, they're going to pick up the phone wherever they are. I have a brother who lives in London, and I have them in Florida, North Carolina, Florida. Wherever they are, they can pick up the phone, and I'm going to make them laugh. I'm just talking. I do that for my friends, but I'm talking my immediate family. So whenever I'm going to go through a rough time myself, whether health-wise or whatever, it's not what keeps me going is not me going to help the world and everything. My reason to live is to be there for. I don't have any children. I have adopted children. I have the children in Haiti that I adopt, that I do. My reason to live, you ask me my reason to live, those are my siblings. Then come my adopted children. They are, because when I think about it, if anything, there will be a void in their lives. Me, as a person that they can pick up the phone and talk to, or they can see they come in my home is a refuge for them, they'll come and they can sleep. Like what my sister, when she's in pain, I just put my hand on her and she falls asleep. It's not, I do that for other patients. No. So if I would come and I'm in pain, let's say I'm very healthy. I'm extremely healthy because I tell this body, you better. And then the body listens. My body listens. And I just had to do it. I went to see for a checkup. You should see my blood test. My doctor say, my God, you're like 20 years old. I say, yes, I tell this body it has no choice. Because I want to be around for my siblings. Not my patients, not my friends, but my siblings. Who, whenever things are rough and tough, they can be there for me. I can be there for them. And they are there for me too. It's mutual. We have a wonderful, loving experience. So they are my reason to live. So I cannot be depressed. Whatever I'm going through life, I want to be continue to be healthy. I will be. I plan to be like my grandmother who died at 87 on the commode because she said, okay, I'm tired and I want to nobody to clean myself. I have to clean myself. The day I can't, I will not. I will not continue. I will die. And she died on the commode just after she was talking to my mother. So that's the way I want to go and plan to go. But God, they say, I have a say in French, l'homme propose, Dieu dispose. You might have plans, but God knows what is the plan he has for you. So this is my life purpose. This is my reason to live, my children, my adopted children, my sisters. When things get tough, this is right now. The picture, we have we just had a family reunion, and we have a picture of the six of us. Beautiful picture. And I have it in my living room. And so whenever I pass by, that's my reason to live. if something happened, I have to make a decision. Should I go? Should I stay? Should I continue to live? I want to live for them. I want to find the strength for them. Did I explain it?
Well, that's a wonderful explanation. And for those of you that have just joined us and those of you that are in the chat room, I want to remind you that you can call in and ask questions of Dr. Carol. You can call in at 310-861-2349. And if you listen to the archived version of this show, please share it on your social media, on your Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest to make sure we get the word out. We're interviewing Dr. Carol, and she's the author of the upcoming book, Heal Your Life. She is a board-certified gynecologist and primary care specialist and an intuitive and spiritual leader who has helped thousands of men and women for the past four decades. Today we're discussing part four, Find Your Reason to Live. And I just want to thank you all for being with us. Those of you that are in the chat room and that are listening right now, please call in if you have a question for Dr. Carol. Please go on, Dr. Carol.
Now let's go back to my patients. And I can give you, for example, in 1996, I had a patient, Gina. Gina had a Polish last name, so I always thought she was Polish. And she's 65 years old. She's ready to retire. She worked at her husband, who's a dentist, and they're going to take 3 months to go to Italy. And she came for a checkup. She came for a checkup to make sure she was okay. And I found a mass. I found a mass on her belly, which turned out to be stage 4 ovarian cancer. That means by the time we opened her up, the cancer was in her ovaries and everywhere, in the bowels and everything. And I remember scrubbing with usually when I used to do surgery, and it was going to be extensive. I'm not an oncologist, so I will go and scrub with we do a co-surgeon. It calls with there's Dr. Plass at UCSD, who's one of the best GYN oncologists at the time we were working together. And then I remember when we opened her up, and then she had you open the person up and you say, what are you going to do? But he's an excellent surgeon, and we call it debulking. Debulking, that means let's take as much of the cancer that we can, because when you do that, the person has a bigger chance of survival. So that means somebody who's ready to retire, ready to go on a tour in Italy, has a stage 4 cancer. And I'm asking Dr. Plass, what do you think? The chance of survival, he said, is very small. And, you know, we're going to go to chemotherapy. She's going to go essentially through hell. And then even for her to have a 15% chance of making it in 5 years. All right. So that's what the first day after the surgery, and I went to see Gina. And she looked at me. I still have her eyes. I still have beautiful green eyes. And I said, I have to tell her the reality. Gina, this is what happened. And then she looked at me and she said, you mean I might not be able to see the new millennium? Remember, we're 1996. And she looked at me, and I saw in her eyes she made that decision. She said, I cannot die. I have to have a grandchild. I have to have a grandchild. And then she made that decision so deeply. And it wasn't just that. She made the decision. She was going to go to chemotherapy. She was going to go to whatever the doctor said to her. She was just going to be fighting, do this and do that. She was going to do everything because she's going to have a grandchild. A grandchild. That's a reason to live. I want a grandchild. I have to have that grandchild. I want to hold the grandchild. So she told me, Dr. Carol, I want a grandchild. I cannot die without holding a grandchild. So, and of course, you know, she went through hell. She would come to see me from time to time. And then, because right now she's seeing the oncologist now. She's going to go to chemotherapy. And time went by. 97, 98, she came down with breast cancer. And I went and at the time when I was doing surgery, if my patients were going to have any kind of surgery, I go as an assistant just to give them the moral support that they know I'm with them, in the operating room, I'm going to be touching them, and then they feel that alone is a healing for them, that as a friend, as a doctor, we pray together before they go to sleep. So I did that. And she goes to chemotherapy. The cancer comes back again. She comes and see me. She has a different wig. And then now, by the time we became friends, she decides she's going to heal herself. She has that grandson. So in the meantime, I remember while we're going through all this, John Kennedy died with his wife in a plane crash when she was pregnant. They both disappeared in the ocean. Princess Diana died. And every time she would come, she would say, you know what, all these young people are dying and they were not even sick. And I said, you never know. You don't know our destiny. She said, I am going to hang in there. Now she's 60, 67. I'm going to hang in there because I want that grandchild. My mother died unexpectedly. So all these people are dying, and Gina is hanging in there. So whenever I see her, she said, yes, I want to have that grandchild. Nobody's married. I want a grandchild. And then she said, you know what, now I have all kinds of wigs. Whenever I have to go to chemo, the cancer come back. And I never forget that. I was in Florida for the new millennium, for January 1st, and I'm realizing, oh, my God. And I had a cell phone. All these people have died, and Gina is still alive. So I'm going to tease her. I'm going to call her. So when I called at the time, we didn't have any cell phone. I called her at home. And then when I called her at home, and her husband answered the phone, and I said, Happy New Year to you. I'm here to wish Gina a Happy New Year. She made it. She made it to the new millennium. And she said, and he said, oh, her son is having a baby. She's most probably the baby is being born right now because she's in the waiting room. She's in the delivery room with them. And do you know, Gina died 2000 years later of something totally unrelated to the cancer. So this is one of the reasons wherever the person is going through cancer, you know, going through cancer is not plenty. It's not easy. Same thing. My sister had the cancer in the year 2000, and the cancer came back. 2014. The cancer came back. They say now it's other part of her body. Then when I talked to the doctor looked at me and said, oh, we don't know what to say. It's dire. Dire means by now it's in her lungs, and they're doing biopsy. They don't know what's going on. She's in the hospital, and she called me. And I said, sis, and we all mortified, sis, what are you going to do? She said, I want a granddaughter. I have to have a granddaughter. She had two sons. One is 39, one is 25. They're not married. And then in my family, you don't have children out of wedlock. I said, sis. Oh. She said, yes, I'm going to make it. I am going to make it as I want a granddaughter. All right. By the time in 2014, where she had the cancer, to make a long story short, one, my nephew, Stephen, got married last November. So we were there as a family in the wedding. And yesterday, my sister always wanted, oh, since then, she said, yes, I'm going to have a granddaughter. While she was in the hospital in 2014, and then she loved gardening, and she wanted to go to, she has some friends, they want to go together. They were planning it before she got sick, to go to Dubai. Dubai, they have something called the Miracle Garden. She always wanted to go for some reason to Dubai to go to the Miracle Garden. She can barely breathe. She's on oxygen. And then she says, sis, I want to go to Dubai. And I said, buy your ticket. So buy your ticket. We're talking September of October. She was going to do, she has to go to chemo. She has to go to radiation. And she's supposed to die. And then she's supposed to be going in January of 2016. And I said, you're going to go to therapy. There's a package that I do for people with cancer where many different things are going to do. And we'll discuss that in the other shows. And your faith, her faith of I'm going to be healed. But for that moment, we're going to take it one step at a time. I'm going to go to Dubai. I said, buy your ticket. She bought a ticket while she's on oxygen. And then, so when I saw my sister, she sent me a picture. She went to with another sister, and they texted me a picture of her in that Miracle Garden. And last November, which is 2016, we were at the wedding. When I saw my sister coming with her husband, walking, you know, they come first before the bride and groom come, I just wept. I saw my sister at the wedding because she said, and then she winked at me. She said, I'm going to make it. And then yesterday, for the past week, she was in Cuba. She said, I want to visit Cuba. And she's seeing the pictures with those old cars. She said, oh, she wanted all this food because Cuba and Haiti were about the same. And she called me last night. What a wonderful time she has in Cuba. My sister was in Cuba. My sister is alive. My sister. So I don't say anything. I don't talk to my nephew and his wife or any babies because my sister is waiting for a baby. So this is, and you know, she went through 35 sessions of radiation. She went through chemotherapy. She went through hell. A faith, number one, and all the other things that were done, and a reason to live, a granddaughter. And I see that every time, whether it's a patient who wants to for smoking or whatever they want to do, whatever, how dire, how difficult, how wrenching. That reason to live, which is for Gina, which was to hold a baby, be a newborn, over one of her children. She had a son and a daughter. And then for my sister, she's living. And I remember when the diagnosis came, you know, as a physician and knowing a surgeon and knowing the dire consequences of where she is, but also have the belief that you can heal your life. That's what the name of the book is. You can heal your life. You can. And those are the things that she's using. Those are the big the things my patients are using to transcend pain, suffering, cancer, diseases. And having a reason to live is one of them, to make it easier.
So you're saying that even in the most dire straits, even in the most dire moments of our lives, we can focus on a reason to live, and
yes,
we can heal our lives. And I can certainly attest to that, being a cancer survivor myself. You know, I was diagnosed with cancer in 2008. The doctor called me from the VA very cold-blooded in the morning at 7:30 and says, "Your results came back and you have cancer," just like that. And I was terrified. I ended up looking at different options. They had terrible side effects. And I decided on the robotic surgery. I went in for my surgery, and my surgeon didn't show up. So at that moment, I decided I'm going to beat this cancer. I'm not going to come back to the VA hospital again. And the receptionist said to me, "We can set an appointment for you to come back. We're sorry the surgeon didn't come." And I said, "You know what? I'm not going to get the surgery. I'm going to beat this on my own." And I left. Everybody in the waiting room started clapping when I said that. And I went and did research, because a lady had told me, if you know someone that has cancer and you love them, tell them about poly-MVA. So I forgot the name of this thing. And I began to search the word poly and look on the internet. And I found poly-MVA, and I didn't even have the money to buy it at the time, but it's very expensive, and a friend of mine gave me the money so that I could buy my first bottle, and I began to take that, and in 3 years, my cancer was gone completely with no surgery, no radiation. And so I can attest to that. If I put my mind to it, if I put my heart to it, if I put my spirit to it, I was able to get through very tough things, naval battles, cancer. So you're putting a name to something that I've been doing most of my life.
Yes, yes. And I need to reiterate, as a physician, and I don't endorse any particular medications or particular drugs or particular supplements or anything. Each person is different. Each person has whenever a patient comes to me and asks me, I'm not an oncologist. I don't give treatments, and I always tell the patients, you're going to choose whatever you believe in, because I believe it's the belief that you have in a particular treatment that's work. If any medication, even those approved by the FDA, they approve because they do placebo. That's one of the reasons they approve medication. So when patients come to me for consultation and I see what's wrong, where in that particular situation, and they choose, it's just like a cake with multiple slices, and they are the candle in the middle. For example, there has to be many different slices for, like, one of them is the reason to live. If you don't have that reason to live, to sustain you to go through the hell of the surgery or the chemic radiation or whatever you choose to do, and their faith and the relationship with the loved ones and many different areas of their lives have to be in balance for it to work. So that's why even different cancer, if you go to an oncologist, you're going to use a particular medication. Some you need chemotherapy, some you cannot have chemo, you need radiation, some you cannot have radiation, you need chemo, and some people will choose alternative. So what I do myself is just like when somebody comes to me and say, I have a particular situation, including cancer, it's just like, let's see your cake, all your view of your life, and all making sure that each slice is in balance with the whole thing, because it's the imbalance that causes us to be sick. It's the imbalance of, let's say, you could be taking the medications, but you don't have the medication might work for a particular situation, but you don't have the money to pay for it. Your financial situation will stress you out. That's what's going to kill you. Or you could have all the money. You can take all these medications, but you have anger in your life that's causing you stress. That's going to kill you. Or you don't have wonderful relationships with your children or with your loved ones. You're alone. You're depressed. Regardless of what you take, everything is going to be off kilter. So the way I see things is just like I call it looking like over like a 30,000 foot view, where I see the person, I see their cake, I see their slices, and making sure that everything works. And then the slice, let's say 12 slices, I'm going to take the medication or whatever I choose, the chemo or whatever, is only one little sliver. So everything has to be in consideration. So the people, like you chose a particular medication, but you were also having your faith. There were all the things you were doing, your reason to live, why you want to see justice. So all those things, there is no such one thing. It's the whole compilation of things that people need to do in order to be healthy, in order to heal their lives, their relationships and all those things, and that would include all the things we'll be talking about.
So everybody is unique. Some people are going to need chemo. Some are going to need radiation. Some are going to need surgery. Some may need a combination of those things. Some people may choose holistic treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm hearing you say is one of the most important things is to have a reason to live, your inner strength. You got to tap into that. You got to grip that. So no matter what you choose, an integral component is the ability to know that you can heal your life and that you can tap into your inner power, inner strength.
Yes. It's one of the sizes, I call it. And then I think the most important, the number one, is to have faith. To have faith in a higher power, the most important one. And then when you have faith in a higher power, it's just like it supersedes your life purpose, your reason to live, all these things that we'll continue discussing. When you essentially having the faith, those, and it's been shown statistically, and like Gina, my patient, she had the faith of a mustard seed. My sister, she has the faith. We Catholic, we pray to the Sacred Heart of Jesus that says, ask and you shall receive. So this is our faith. And so my sisters know that she goes to the Sacred Heart Church, and she prays on Sunday. So essentially, like I said, to me is the number one. When you have that, you just put it in the back burner. You're just like, oh, and they're like a psalm for my patient who are Christian, because our patient were Jewish. My patient who are Jewish, we have the prayer, it ends like, Adonai li velo ira. God is with me, I shall not fear. God is with me, I shall not fear. And for the for those my patients who are Christian, and including my sister, it said, Psalm 37:5, recommande ton sort à l'éternel, fais-lui confiance et il agira. Leave it to the Lord and just trust and watch miracles. The reason is that, yes, you can have a reason to live. Yes, you have a life purpose. Yeah, and then other things we're going to discuss. When you have that faith, and that's what I see when I go to Haiti, where we don't have any medical, anything, any supplies, any materials, and the people survive. When you have that faith, essentially, just like, mom is there. You have money in the bank. So it's one less worry that you have. It's a worry. Me, as a human, I'm going to be doing all this. I'm going to go to the chemo. I'm going to go to this. And the reason I want to live is because I have I want to have a granddaughter, or I want to hold a baby in the delivery room, like Gina. But these people and those people, those patients that I see, it's not only cancer, for any disease, anything that is disturbing the body, they have that faith. They have that faith.
So, Dr. Carroll, we're down to our last 4 minutes now.
Oh,
and,
okay.
All right. Maybe next week when we go into You Have Choices, Part 5,
yes.
you can speak to people that are atheists and people that are humanists. I'm a humanist, so we may not have a higher power, and perhaps you can give more direction. But I know that for a long time you didn't have faith, and that you were not a believer, and so I want to delve into that. Perhaps we can do that next week to help those people.
Yes.
So our time is almost up, and I want to thank you very much, Dr. Carroll, for going.
Because I want to give a homework for my our listeners.
Okay.
I call it a true healing action plan. So if you've been listening to the show, you need to take time to write, to find what is my reason to live. And if you don't have one, how would you figure it out? For example, you ask yourself, what or who might be affected if I'm not around? You have a cause or a charity like your children or something. Having a reason to live is part of the healing process. It's part of having faith in yourself, and in, like you might not have, it's part of having faith. And having faith, that's what keeps you healthy.
Okay, so you've got your marching orders, audience. And please make sure that you come back and join us next week. This is 8 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Mountain, 10 a.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Eastern Time. I also encourage you to visit drcarroll.com/services, and there you can find more answers and more support by going to her website. And we've had a great pleasure to listen to Dr. Carroll Jean-Mouret, the author of the upcoming book Heal Your Life. She's a board certified OBGYN and primary care specialist, an intuitive and spiritual healer who has helped thousands of men and women for the past 4 decades. If you need a second opinion for a medical condition or surgery, or if you're stuck in any area of your personal life, relationship, or career and need answers that will empower you, visit her website and fill out the forms there and get in touch with Dr. Carroll. Thank you so much, Dr. Carroll, for being on the show. We're at our last minute and a half here.
All right.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Did you want to leave any other wisdom with our audience before we sign off?
We will discuss more next time. More tools, and that when things get tough, like for my patients or for my sisters, or for myself, and then stay tuned and join us again.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you all of you who are listening in the chat room and listening live right now. Please be sure to share this show with your family, friends, and constituents. I really appreciate all of you for being on board right now and listening to this show. It's been great having Dr. Carroll on board, and get the book when the book is coming out. It'll be out this summer, hopefully, and it's just packed with wisdom. I have the manuscript here, and it's simply fantastic, and there's something in there for everyone. There's great strength in healing your life, and I can definitely attest to that myself, in terms of how I've applied some of these techniques in my own journey. This is Walter Davis coming to you from Canyon Lake, California, in Southern California, right in between Los Angeles and San Diego. And I hope that you have a wonderful day and that you enjoy great success in everything that you endeavor to. Thank you very much for listening to the show.
Thank you. in the morning.